It's the Morning Jam. We're so glad to have some folks in our studio right now that are doing a great work. Teresa Clower and Barbara Francois. So, ladies, so you both are from North Carolina. We've established that. You were here visiting the folks at University of Lynchburg because you have an event that begins on October the 5th and will run all the way through into November 12th. So it is Into Light. Let's talk about what Into Light is.
To begin with, it's a nonprofit organization that was established to help erase the stigma of drug addiction. And the way we do that is through the power of art. The project was inspired 3 years ago by the death of my son, Devin. Mm. He was 32 years old. He had substance use disorder for about 10 years of his life, and he died in Baltimore on February 4th, 2018. And his death really inspired this project. The interesting thing to me is that I had never done a portrait, and Into Light is all about graphite portraits of people who have died from substance use disorder. And I began with an exhibition in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And from that, this project has grown, and we're now, Virginia is our fifth state.
Oh, wow.
And I have drawn 41 portraits. Actually, I take that back. I've drawn 32 portraits, mm-hmm, of individuals in Virginia.
Okay.
And Barbara has written the narratives for them. And this exhibition will hang in the gallery at the University of Lynchburg. Our whole goal is to hope that through seeing these beautiful faces of people, and something about artwork grabs people, makes them stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather unusual to see portraits of selfies done in this sense. So our goal is that people will begin seeing the individuals that are in the exhibition as people just like all of us. So we're all made up of light and dark, and we have our shades of gray in there.
Mm-hmm.
And no one should be defined by their darkest moments. And people who have struggled with this disease are people like us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our goal, that the audiences that come through during that 5 weeks when the exhibition is on display will read their narratives, look at their faces, and realize that they were loved, and they're people who loved others. So,
So you're talking about a narrative, Teresa. Tell me when that came on board, and then we're going to ask Barbara what it's like to write these narratives.
The narratives began right from the onset of project, and honestly, I had no idea that I was going to be mounting a national exhibition. The goal is an exhibition in every state,
mm-hmm,
as I think I may have mentioned. And so when we began in Baltimore, where Devin died, I was just simply at that point focused on the 41 people there and their stories. It started like that. But what happened is people were beginning to come up to us and say, oh, can we have one in New Jersey? Can we have an exhibition here? Can we have one there? So that's how it sort of took off. But the narratives have always been a critical part of the story. And there's a beautiful catalog that comes out with this exhibition that each of the families is gifted. And incidentally, all the portraits are gifted to the families at the end of the exhibition, as well as the catalogs. But reading the stories, it might be helpful to let you know a little bit about how we get the individuals and how we get the information.
Okay.
We reach out in the communities that we're working in. So, as I said, Virginia is the fifth state. In Virginia, we have sent out months and months ago requests for submissions to support groups, people who are in recovery communities who, mm-hmm, know others, and that's how it begins. So submission is through our online portal, and the families fill out a rather detailed questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And from that, Barbara creates the narrative, and they submit up to three good images, mm-hmm. pictures, photographs of their loved ones. And that's what I use as the reference. So it's done in that fashion. So the Virginia series is really made up of people from all over the state, I think with maybe the exception of the west part of the country, of the state. But yeah, it's so the narratives are critical.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the sketches, and they're quite amazing. I just want to address you now, Barbara, as you're writing these narratives and you're gathering information from the families. How often do you just kind of stop and look at the portraits to draw inspiration from the portrait itself to write your narrative?
I do that quite a bit. The portraits are very inspiring, and I know that Teresa has taken a lot of time and energy and focus and put every tiny little line in there, you know, is meaningful. And the same for me with the narratives. I look at the faces. I often talk to people on the phone as well. Sometimes people would prefer a personal interview instead of writing out all the question, mm-hmm. all the answers to the questions that we pose. And then I, you know, kind of sometimes I'll even go on social media. I'll look at things that people have posted about them. I just try to go, you know, get every aspect of them that I can before I start writing.
So this might sound like a strange question, but do you both walk away, and either one of you can chime in, you didn't know this person existed before they entered into your project into light?
Exactly.
Do you feel like they're part of me? They're part of my larger family now, because I've invested so much by way of writing and sketching. Either one of you guys, ladies.
I think we both could talk to that, and I'm sure Barbara will chime mm-hmm. in. But it's powerful how in order to do this work, both of us need to get into, like, I go through the eyes, and mm-hmm. once I begin drawing, I focus on those eyes, and often you'll find me in tears when mm-hmm. I'm drawing.
Right.
Because I feel that energy, and I could cry right now, actually. I feel that spirit, that, and most of these are young people. I mean, the average age is, I think, 30. We have young people as young as 17. I think we even had a 16-year-old. And it goes on up. But, you know, you're looking at these images, mm-hmm. and your heart is just, mine just cracks wide open.
Sure.
And I think that part of it, and the fact that I lost a son to this disease, and I understand what that means, I think that I just believe that you have to feel it. And, you know, I mean, ideally we would have been talking about expanding out writers and artists, but it's not as technical it's not a technical exercise, it's an emotional exercise.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So
I feel that way too. When I write, I read what was written, or, you know, I've talked to a parent, and I'll sit with them for a long time. I'm tearing up now just thinking about it.
Sure.
They are part of our family.
Right.
They, you know, I won't forget them.
Mm-hmm.
I choose every word really carefully. Mm-hmm. I try to portray who they were as a whole person and show, you know, all the things that they did in life from the time they were little. I put little anecdotes in there about mm-hmm. things that they liked to do when they were small, and their siblings, and, you know, the vacations they took together, and all the things that all of us do.
Right.
They're absolutely no different than any of my family members, myself, everyone else that I know in the world. But yet, you know, there's a stigma around them that doesn't exist for other people,
right,
because they have a substance use disorder, which is a disease. But people see portrayals in the media or other places, and they just think, you know, they're not the same, but they are.
Right.
So I do my best to really portray them as a whole, complete person, and I fall in love with every one of them.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
Sure, I am. I'm struck by a couple things here, just talking to you, and one of the reasons I'm doing the interview is I lost a second cousin to an overdose.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And you did Brendan's portrait, and my cousin Mary Jane Hall, who is Brendan's mom. I grew up with Mary Jane, and when she reached out to me initially for us to talk, I could see this was really something she needed, because I'll see her posts on certain things on Facebook and groups that she's part of. So I know that the thing that I'm struck by is that it's a, to me, it would be a balancing act to help bring healing through what you do, and in a sort of byproduct way, you bring hope too, because they are not alone, those moms and dads and sisters and brothers and loved ones and friends that lost someone. They aren't alone. There are other people on that journey together that have found healing, and that's, I think, where the hope comes in. I can be better than I was, than the initial impact, the gut punch that you got when you lost that person that you cared about. So tell me about that. When you get into these drawings, when you get into the narrative, or when you get into an exhibit, tell me a little bit about what that healing looks like, because you get to see it in the process. You've experienced it yourself, but you also get to see something change, maybe some rough edge around somebody who is so hurt. Now they begin to soften a little bit.
Yeah. Really interesting how the original artwork is so incredibly powerful. And I did talk about that briefly a minute ago, but there's something about a hand-drawn piece that makes people stop. And I think because it is so unusual, whereas photographs are a dime a dozen, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, you're giving people an opportunity to see a loved one in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, we have felt with this project from day one that we want it, the drawings and the narratives, to be presented in the most beautiful way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So they're professionally framed. All of them are white framed. They're, the catalog with the portraits and narratives is perfect, bound, beautiful. People were saying, oh, just go and get an inexpensive frame and whatever. And I said, no. These people deserve to be in a gallery setting, a mm-hmm. beautiful setting, with beautiful framing and catalog. So I can give you an example of a mother who walked in to the very first exhibition in Baltimore. And she walked up to me. She had just spent time visiting with her daughter, and who was part of the exhibition. And she came over to me and she said, Teresa, this is the first time I've been able to hold my head high after my daughter died. Uh-huh. We have seen this kind of change in others. Other people have used the catalog and sent it to family members who basically disowned them because of their illness, their child's illness.
Right.
And that has turned lives around. The catalog, just looking at the stories and the images, we had one mother say her entire family basically disowned her after the death of her only child. And so she just quietly sent that catalog to everyone, didn't say anything, and they read Alex's narrative, they looked at his portrait, and several of them called her and said how sorry they were that they had judged her, her mothering. Alex's choices were immoral in their minds, so now they've changed that. So I think that, you know, in a quiet and very simple way, Into Light is changing attitudes. And I think that the value of that is just what we want from the project is that those attitudes begin slowly changing.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll mention quickly is just by having that portrait hang in their home somewhere, mm-hmm. they can have conversations that ripple out. And by explaining that their loved one was part of this project, I mean, many people don't even admit how their loved one died.
Right.
So this is bringing all of that sort of up and out in a way that we're beginning to change language.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It takes so much courage for the family members to submit their loved one to this project in a lot of cases because they haven't admitted this is how they died. And they haven't been supported through the whole time by everyone. I mean, some people are lucky enough to have quite a bit of support, but other ones they're stigmatized just like their loved one was.
Wow.
And so this gives an opportunity for them to talk about the person that they lost. I mean, their grief is really present.
Sure.
And they don't get an opportunity to talk because of the way that their loved one died and the stigma around it.
Yeah.
People don't want to bring it up. And when I talk to them on the phone, they're like so grateful. They'll stay on the phone for a couple hours sometimes just telling me other things I don't really need for the story, but I want to listen because
sure.
it's so meaningful to them
yeah.
to be able to have someone who is not judging them to
yeah.
talk about who their person was, who their son or daughter or other loved one was. So that's really big. I think we need to consider that the stigma is not just around the individual who died from the substance use disorder, but it's also around the family.
Sure.
So that's huge. And another thing that I think that is important is that a lot of the parents, particularly mothers, tend to do this more than others, is they have started support groups, they have started nonprofits, they're very active in channeling their grief and their energy into the project, just like Teresa has. And so I think, you know, it's starting to have that ripple effect where people are starting to understand the disease more, but there's a lot more work to do, and that's part of what we're trying to accomplish.
Sure. And you know, unfortunately, and because we cover politics and news, we know that the things that are happening in our country with the fentanyl and other drugs that are so readily available, it just breaks your heart. And we want to fight this on all fronts, on the preventative side, on the side of healing, which is the side, you know, that you all find yourself on. We need everybody to be involved in all aspects
right.
of this. Otherwise, we're not going to see it turn the way we need to see it turn in a good way. And I'm so glad that you're out there doing what you're doing, bringing some awareness and helping break really the chains of the stigma, because it's like running around with chains on because you feel that.
There's a few statistics that you should probably be aware of, and one of them is that 93,000 people died from overdose in 2020.
Wow.
That's huge.
That is huge.
914,000 since 1999.
Wow.
And also,
one thing I was going to add is that 90% of the people that suffer from this disease don't come forth for help. 90%.
That's crazy. Wow.
So that's the first step.
Sure.
And my own son, if Devin had been comfortable coming to his dad and me saying, "Mom, Dad, I have a problem," within the first few months, he would have had a much, much better chance of fighting this.
Right.
His brain at that point was altered, definitely, but it still had hope of turning it around. There are medications for this disease. People have to understand that. There is a way of fighting it medically. But until people begin to feel comfortable talking about it, then it's not going to, doesn't matter how many recovery communities or whatever the science is saying, if people are not comfortable talking about the help they need, they're not going to get it.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Well, in many of our, I mean, almost everyone that I write about has gone into treatment at some point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if they had felt, as Teresa said, comfortable coming forward early rather than feeling ashamed,
sure,
because society tells them they should be ashamed, mm-hmm, then they maybe could have had a different outcome.
Sure. Well, we're so glad that you guys, we're so glad that you ladies stopped by the studio today. Right now, we're going to wrap it up with Teresa Clower and Barbara Francois. Did I get that right?
Yes.
All right. I knew I'd probably get it right towards the end of the interview. We're so glad. Give us the dates one more time, and then tell our listeners how they could help contribute to what you ladies are a part of.
Okay. The date is October the 5th through November the 12th at the University of Lynchburg.
Dar
Museum, right on the campus. Your listeners can help by supporting us. So, I mean, there's lots of ways that we can talk about support, but one would be, of course, to spread the news that the exhibition is there.
Right.
The other way is we depend completely on donations for our work. I should mention that Central Health and Invideor, mm-hmm, here locally are giving us each contributions for this work.
Nice.
But individuals, most of our donations come from individuals, and that can be right at our website, which is intolightproject.org.
Mark, I just wanted to make sure that you know that there's no charge to the families. Everything that we do is funded by donations. And at the end of the exhibit, the families get the portrait and the catalog.
Great. That's so important. IntoLightProject.org. We will link that to our Facebook page. Ladies, thank you again for stopping by The Morning Jam.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Morning Jam with Janet and Mark, 6 to 9 a.m.